Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He doesn't always play nice. And that's what gets you the information you need. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, it is Hockey Hall of Fame weekend in Toronto. What a group this is. Rob Blake, Mike Modano, Dominic Hasek, Peter Forsberg, Bill McCreary, and the late, great Pat Burns. And I've always told people that in my time working at the Montreal Gazette, I mean, I was really lucky. I had three people that I could interview on a semi-regular basis. One was Buck Rogers, manager of the Montreal Expos. Two, of course, was Philippe Alou, the manager of the Montreal Expos. And three, for a while at least, was Pat Burns. And Pat Burns was an absolute joy to be around as a reporter. You heard Chris Chelios, on with us yesterday talking about Pat Burns. And how he could, you know, how he was one of those guys who could rip the shreds out of a player while at the same time having the player's back. There's really an art to being the type of guy Pat Burns was, to have the type of personality Pat Burns had and still be able to communicate with people and still be able to lead people to success, to better themselves, to have career seasons, to be able to lead good teams. Part of Pat Burns' legacy, of course, is his work with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I dare say, you know, when you talk to Leafs fans about Leafs teams that they liked, you know, Leafs teams that they really felt an affinity for, those Pat Burns teams were very much up there. I mean, post-67, they were probably some of the most beloved Leafs teams. And I really think in a lot of ways, they're the group that subsequent Leafs teams have been measured against. Cliff Fletcher is the man who hired Pat Burns as the Leafs head coach. He is now the Maple Leaf senior advisor. Cliff Fletcher joins the Jeff Blair Show. Cliff, thanks a lot for doing this morning.
Always a pleasure, Jeff.
Good to talk to you again. What did you see in Pat Burns? What did you see in Pat Burns when you made that decision?
Well, it was a very easy decision to make. As a matter of fact, I'd been down in Florida for a couple of days, for a week actually, after the 91-92 season, and I got a call from Donnie Meehan saying that, it looks like Montreal might be making a coaching change, and, you know, if you had any interest, this thing could almost happen simultaneously. Well, obviously, I had interest. If you go back and reflect on the Toronto Maple Leafs in the late 1980s, they really had their struggles. And when they brought me on board in 91, halfway through the year, we were able to make the Doug Gilmour trade, which caused a little buzz in the town. But nothing caused a buzz like the hiring of Pat. I mean, Pat had won the Jack Adams Trophy as Coach of the Year with Montreal. And even the spring before that he was let go, they beat Hartford in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And it brought credibility to a Maple Leaf franchise when it desperately needed it. I remember the press conference taking place, I think it was early June. We had it at Center Ice at the old Maple Leaf Gardens. And I've never felt a buzz in the city about the Maple Leaf hockey team like I did that day.
You know, it's interesting because you hired Pat after the year they finished first in the Adams Division. They lost in the second round 3 years in a row. After going to the Stanley Cup final, they lost in the second round. And I think some people were wondering, okay, Pat Burns, great coach, but man, his team seemed to, you know, second round, they run into the second round. I don't know if they burn out, but they seem to run into issues in the second round. Was there any concern on your part when you were bringing him in that you were getting a guy who might burn out the team a little bit?
Well, put it this way, when you're in a situation when the Leafs in those days had made the playoffs for years, you weren't too concerned about the possibility of a team burning out in the second round.
That's true.
We were just happy that we were going to be able to Pat could get us in the playoffs, let alone anything else.
Right.
Which he did. I mean, Pat was a hard coach on players. He was very demanding, but he also was really smart enough to gravitate towards the key players on the team that would make it all happen most nights. And like when he was with the Leafs here, he has great relationships with Wendell Clark and Doug Gilmore and Dave Ellett and Felix Potvin. He was a very, very smart but demanding hockey coach.
What was he like to work above? In other words, as his boss, what was it like to have to talk to Pat about something or to have to sound Pat out about something? How was his relationship with you?
I thought we had a very good relationship. I mean, Pat had a very strong personality, and obviously he had his own ideas on how to bring a hockey team to the point where it could be very successful, but we had a very good relationship, and I enjoyed working with him very much.
You've worked with a lot of coaches. Is there something common to every good coach that Pat also possessed? Because I know coaches have different personalities, and obviously Cliff teams have different personalities, and sometimes it's an extension of the coach, sometimes it isn't. But is there a common element to successful coaches, and did Pat have that part of that particular element?
Well, I think the part of the element that Pat did have, and he was very successful, is he was very demanding. Losing was unacceptable, period, mm-hmm. under any circumstances, and he got that through to the players. I mean, the players knew that if they lost the game, it was going to be darn miserable around for until the next game happened. So the motivation was there to go out and play hard every team. He absolutely insisted that his team played hard every game. If you, the old expression, a lunch bucket type of team or a blue collar team, those are the type of teams that Pat Burns had.
Cliff Fletcher joins the Jeff Blair Show. What was he like as an X's and O's guy?
Well, I think he was more of a player's coach and a motivator. Some people excel at X's and O's, and he had some assistants around him who were good X's and O's people, Mike Kitchen, Mike Murphy. But his strength by far was running the team behind the bench during the game. He wasn't making mistakes there, and your chances of winning with Pat Burns behind your bench was a lot better than some coaches behind other teams' benches.
Could Pat Burns and that personality still work with a modern-day player?
You know what, Jeff? I think he could because, well, first of all, every coach is smart enough to adjust to the realities of the times. But I think he could because he always had. There's a saying that a coach has no chance unless the best players on the team buy that particular coach's program. Well, Pat always had great relationships with the key mm-hmm. players on the team. So on that basis, I would say his chances of being very successful today would be pretty good.
Cliff, he had good relationships with the very good players on the team. He did the same thing in Montreal, but how did he find the balance between having good relationships with guys like Doug Gilmore and not necessarily favoring them? Because there is a fine line there, right, between favoring a guy and having a good relationship with them. Was at the end of the day, was it just Pat's sort of sense of fairness that allowed him to do that?
Well, I don't know whether it's a sense of fairness or a sense of reality. I mean, he knew where his bread was buttered, and I mean, and he knew that he would the team would only go as far as the best players took them, and that was very much a part of his strategy and his personality in dealing with the players and the team. If you were on the bottom lines or the bottom pair of defense, the chances are you're going to be much more of a whipping boy than the key players were.
Interesting. Cliff, listen, we appreciate you joining us as always. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Jeff. My pleasure.
It's Cliff Fletcher, Maple Leaf senior advisor, former general manager. One of the biggest baseball fans I know, too, and always a pleasure to talk to Cliff Fletcher, and had a lot of fun covering his teams when he was in Calgary as well. So again, the Hockey Hall of Fame inductions are this weekend. It's Hasek, Blake, Modano, Bill McCreary, Pat Burns, you just heard us talk about that, Peter Forsberg, all going into the Hall of Fame. And I've heard Peter Forsberg described as a guy who changed the way players thought of Swedish players. And I wondered about that because I grew up watching the Winnipeg Jets when they brought Ulf Nilsson and Anders Hedberg over and Lars-Erik Sjöberg, when it was kind of the original Swedish invasion, I guess, along with Salming and Hammerstrom to the Leafs. And I always marveled at how tough, in their own way, Hedberg and Nilsson were. And they weren't going to fight. But they took an awful lot of abuse. And they just seemed to be so strong on the puck. And it wasn't a sort of a pronounced physicality. It was almost understated. Now, anybody who's watched Borje Salming or who watched Borje Salming play knows as well that Borje Salming was an unbelievably strong guy. And a very tough guy as well. But Forsberg was different. I guess he was kind of Swedish power forward, kind of a prototypical power forward. Chris Draper is a four-time Stanley Cup winner. He's the Red Wings special assistant to the general manager. It's like Red Wings week. We've had Chelios on. We've got Chris Draper on now, which is fine with me as far as I'm concerned. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing good this morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. What was Forsberg? I want to talk to you about this Hall of Fame class because you played against. You had a lot of one-on-one battles against these guys. What was Forsberg like to play against?
I'll tell you what. I have so much respect for Peter Forsberg. He's a complete hockey player. He was he could beat you any way you wanted to play. You want to play run and gun, he obviously has a high skill level to do that. You want to play a finesse game, he could do that. He's a guy that, probably the one of the first guys that kind of did that reverse body check when you're going in on him to go get the puck. You know, he was going to slam the brakes on a couple feet before he got the puck, and he was going to hit you. And if you weren't ready, and if you weren't on your balance and on your edges, you were going right on your butt, no doubt about it. He's a guy that, when you're playing against him, you had to be ready. Offensively, he could do whatever he wanted to do with the puck. He'd take the puck to the net. He could thread a sauce pass through seams. Like I said, I so much respect for the way that he played. And I heard you call him a power forward. He hit me once, and I kind of got tangled up with him and dislocated my thumb. I just kind of the strength that. Mm-hmm. That he has. He was a huge part of the rivalries that I had with the Detroit Red Wings, obviously going back through the Stanley Cup playoffs. And they were, we always felt that, and I can bring Mike Modano into the mix as well, we kind of felt that, at any time in the Western Conference, you're looking at Detroit, Dallas, or Colorado, and chances are the Stanley Cup was going to go through one of those in the Western Conference. And, they had an amazing team, and I was fortunate enough to Dominic Hasek you know, to play with him and win a couple Stanley Cups with him in 02 and 08. Played with Mike Modano as well, someone that I had have a ton of respect for as well as a hockey player. Just an effortless skater and a guy that I always remember. I just thought it was so cool how his jersey would just kind of flap in the wind when he would skate. I thought I was fast, and then all of a sudden I'm like, man, I can't make my jersey go like that. I'm going down on Monday, and, you know, these are guys, Rob Blake, you know, guys that certainly I was able to play against and play with, and, you know, it's a lot more fun playing with these guys than against them. But, you know, Peter Forsberg, you know, unbelievable hockey player. Mike Modano, you know, just, you know, you're talking one of the greatest American hockey players to ever play the game. Dominic Hasek, to me, you know, one of the greatest goaltenders, and probably one of the greatest goaltending displays that I saw was in the 2002 Stanley Cup in the Western Conference Finals. We lost game five. I believe Peter Forsberg actually scored the OT winner that game in Detroit. We had to go back to Colorado for game six, and Dom put on an absolute goaltending clinic. We ended up beating them 2-0. Then we came back and eliminated Colorado in the seventh game. But you know, it was that 2002, that seven game series against Colorado. It had everything. You know, you look at the guys from those teams that are going into the Hall of Fame, and it just shows you why it was the to me some of the greatest and most intense hockey that I was ever a part of.
Chris Draper joins the Jeff Blair Show. I covered that series a little bit, and I always tell people I remember going into the Red Wings dressing room, and the Red Wings dressing room during the playoffs was a bunch of guys who all had beards, all were scarred up, and sometimes just looked so beaten up. And I think, that was an unbelievably physical series. I always just remember that about those Red Wings teams, Chris. As I go in, I go, God, these guys are just hammered. I mean, they're scarred up. They could barely move. It really was a physical series, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, you guys, you felt that if you could just get through the Western Conference, I wouldn't want to say in one piece, but relatively healthy, you knew it was going to be an absolute grind. Then you could put yourself in a situation where you could win the Stanley Cup. And, that seven game series, both teams, both organizations, the players and, you know, going back and forth and every other night for 2 weeks. And you just go down the list of you know, Stevie Yzerman, Brendan Shanahan, Chris Chelios, Dominic Hasek, Peter Forsberg, Joe Sakic, Patrick Waugh. Chris Drury. I mean, the list goes down of the players that were involved in this. And, you know, you realize, for me, I always say I was, you know, so fortunate to play on that 02 team because of all the guys that are going into the Hall of Fame. And that's obviously Dom's going in. Nick Lidstrom's going to be going in. Pavel Datsyuk, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Unbelievable amount of skill. But with that said, there was so much hatred that had built up in those years from 96, you know, going into 02. There was so much hatred going on that, you know, you were never turning away from a hit. Mm-hmm. If you had an opportunity to finish a check, you were going to finish a check, you know, and you're going to block a shot. You're going to do whatever. You knew that, you know, this was going to be a long series. So games 1, 2, and 3, whatever it might be, you knew that these things were going to pay dividends in a seven game series. And that's exactly what it ended up going. And, you know, like I said, I know Colorado, you know, obviously the Hall of Famers that they have going in, and for us too. You look at those two organizations in that year, it was, for me, a very special year to play with so many Hall of Fame hockey players.
What was Dominic Hasek like to play in front of?
Super intense man. He was the guy that kind of, you know, he orchestrated the trade. You know, he wanted to come to Detroit. He felt he wanted to win the Stanley Cup, and he made it known that he wanted to come to Detroit to win the Stanley Cup, which is obviously, you know, we're very fortunate to have a player that believes in the Detroit Red Wings to be able to do that. But with that said, it put a ton of pressure on our hockey club. You know, you had Scotty Bowman coaching the team. You know, we had, you know, we obviously won in 98, and then we had a couple, you know, a couple early exits, and things weren't going so well. And then all of a sudden, in that summer, you know, we get Dominic Hasek, we get Luke Rovitaille, we get Brett Hull. You know, now with that said, with the players that we've already have, now you're looking at a team that has a ton of pressure to not only win, but if we didn't win the Stanley Cup, you ask any of those players, it's a major disappointment of a season. So there was a lot of pressure on that team, and Dom came in. Probably, I didn't know Dominic Hasek. I obviously knew about him as a hockey player. I didn't know about him as a person. I just knew he was one of the best goaltenders to ever play the game. He comes into our locker room, and the focus that he brought, you know, day in and day out was unbelievable. Like, he was, in practice, he did not want to get scored on. You could see the frustration if you scored a goal. He would do drills that was, he would almost set himself up to fail, but he would challenge himself to be able to make sure that he could win. And one of my favorite things, he, you know, there was, you know, after practice, he'd grab, you know, five or six of us, and he'd want to do breakaways.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after practice, we're all for this. And he goes, okay. He goes, it's 7-0 for you guys. And we're like, 7-0. It's like, he spotted us 7 goals. So we go down and, you know, first couple of times we, you know, so we score and we win. And you can see he gets the pucks and he sweeps all the pucks out of the net. And he goes, okay, we'll go again. We're thinking like, Dom, you're giving us 7 goals. Like, I mean, we know how good you are, but all we got to do is score 3. Sure enough, the next 2, he wins. You know, and it just shows you the competitive nature that Dominic Hasek has. And, you know, like I said, you know, in 2002, the playoffs, you know, we ended up losing the first 2 games to Vancouver, and you could just all of a sudden see what a intense and focused he was in Game 3, and we ended up winning that game. You know, going into Colorado down 3-2, he comes back with back-to-back shutouts for us to win in 7 and go on and go to win the Stanley Cup that year. We lose Game 1 in overtime to Carolina Hurricanes. He comes back. We win Game 2. Game 3 is the triple overtime game, and Hasek was outstanding in that. And the amazing, we basically played 2 games that night, and it's amazing how, you know, the next, that morning, I remember we got a call, Kirk Mulpey and myself, that Dom wanted to skate. He wanted to take some shots. And I mean, I probably played in a triple overtime game, I don't know, maybe 25 minutes. He was obviously in for the duration of the game. And I'm exhausted, physically and mentally exhausted. And Dom wants to go down. He wants to stay in his routine and he wants to take shots. So sure enough, Maltz and I, you know, throw our clothes on and go down to the rink, and there was about 5 or 6 of us, and we had a 3-game skate. But it just shows you that how focused he was. And you know what? He was a great teammate. He was a great teammate. He wanted to win. He came into the Detroit Red Wings, you know, organization and locker room, and basically just, you know, wanted to be one of the guys. But he also came there, you know, for a purpose, and was a very focused individual, and came in to win a Stanley Cup. And I'm glad to be able to be a part of that. And obviously going on, he was with us in 08 as well when we won. And to me, 08 kind of sums up, you know, Dominic Hasek. You know, he started the playoffs. You know, he wanted to be the guy. Obviously it didn't work out. Chris Osgood came in, and Ozzy, you know, I think Ozzy rambles off 9 straight victories in a row. And Dom was a great teammate to Chris Osgood and to all of us. And if guys wanted on an optional skate, Dominic Hasek would be out there. If guys want a shot afterwards, Dominic Hasek would be out there. So to me, you know, as ultra competitive as this guy was, he was also, you know, he was going to be ready. If anything happened, and if Ozzy had a little, you know, setback or, you know, lost the game, you know, Dom, you know, wanted to go in and wanted to be the guy. And, you know, he's, you know, like I said, one of the most competitive hockey players that I've ever played with.
Great stories, Chris. Listen, we really appreciate you doing this. Have a great time this weekend. Should be a lot of fun.
Should be, yeah. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Take care. That is Chris Draper, 4-time Stanley Cup winner, Red Wings special assistant to the GM. He's played with and against all these guys. It's like your peer group going in, right? It's like your high school
student council or something like that. It's like they're all getting, they've all qualified for Rhodes scholarships or something like that. Rob Blake, Dominic Hasek, Mike Modano, Peter Forsberg, Pat Burns, Bill McCurry. This is like, this is a really, really strong, really strong Hall of Fame class. And it's, you could tell by some of the things Chris Chelios was saying yesterday and Chris Draper today, there are going to be a lot of great stories told this weekend. And I've got to think there will be a few, there will be a few toasts to the memory of one Pat Burns this weekend as well. We appreciate Cliff Fletcher joining the Jeff Blair Show to talk about Pat Burns and Chris Draper joining the show to talk about essentially the entire graduating class, which is perfect, or the entire Hall of Fame class, which is perfect. Not so perfect are your 5-5 Buffalo Bills, a 22-9 loss to the Miami Dolphins in Thursday Night Football. Kyle Orton, poof, turned into a pumpkin. That's not really all that fair to Kyle Orton. I thought Doug Marrone's probably the guy that needs to shoulder a lot of the blame for what happened last night. Much was made on WGR last night. I was listening to the post-game show when I drive home, because really listening to the Bills post-game show is just, it's like a guilty pleasure. And a lot was made of the fact that Doug Marrone came in and in his introductory news conference essentially said, I'm going to be a guy who isn't afraid to try new stuff. We're going to surprise teams. A couple of instances last night where he seemed to discover his inner conservative, whether it was him and Nathaniel Hackett, they seemed to discover their inner conservative. It was not an imaginative game plan by any stretch of the imagination. Now the Bills are 2-5 against the AFC. They've got just a god-awful schedule down the stretch. And as one of the guys in WGR said last night, so let's see. Coach's job on the line, no first-round pick next year, and no idea whether or not EJ Manuel can quarterback the team. What exactly has been accomplished in the past 2 years? Mark Kelso is a former safety with the Bills. He's their current color analyst in WGR 550. Mark Kelso will join us. We'll get his take on the Bills. 5-5 after that loss. Are we seeing another sorry narrative and an all-too-familiar sorry narrative develop around the Bills? Mark Kelso will join the Jeff Blair Show at 10:40.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, so it's beginning to sound like a familiar refrain with the Buffalo Bills. 22-9 losers to the Miami Dolphins last night in Thursday Night Football. The Bills' record falling to 5-5. Kyle Orton now struggled in back-to-back games, but I don't think anybody really expected Kyle Orton to have an all-star season. So here we go with the Bills. The backup quarterback has struggled in back-to-back games. Still don't have any idea whether EJ Manuel can be an everyday NFL quarterback. And the team doesn't have a first-round pick in this year's draft. Oh yeah, and by the way, they're 2-5 against the AFC. They've got a difficult schedule down the stretch. And now, I would think more than ever, there will be an awful lot of questions about Doug Marrone's status with the Buffalo Bills. It really does. I mean, you really do feel sorry for Bills fans. It was like I said, driving home last night, listening to WGR. And honestly, I just felt so, I felt so bad for everybody, because the whole discussion was, are we going through this again? Like, this wasn't supposed to be like this. You know, Leafs fans and Blue Jays fans, you know, we all, there's always a tendency to think you're really hard done by. But, folks, I'm not certain it's anything compared to what Buffalo fans have gone through in recent years, because it's the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And all gets back to the quarterback. That's always been the case, frankly, since Jim Kelly was here. Drew Bledsoe, Rob Johnson, there was a little patch there. Doug Flutie, there was a little patch there as well. But nothing that screamed stability going forward. And I've got to think, as frustrating of things as things have been for Bills fans in recent years, this might be the point where the frustration becomes even more and more pronounced, because not only are we seeing the same issues over and over again with the Bills offensively, it's coming at a time where their defense is pretty damn good. I mean, Mario Williams had a, like Bruce Smith last night. It was a very good defensive effort by that team. It's a very good defensive line. And they are just, they're just squandering. They squandered games. They've squandered great defensive efforts. So Buffalo hasn't scored a touchdown since the first quarter of last week's loss to the Chiefs. Three of their final four games are against the Broncos, Packers, and Patriots. Granted, the Dolphins still have to go to Denver and New England as well on the road. But I think it's safe to say that they created a little bit of separation last night by beating the Bills 22-9. I also should throw Jerry Hughes in. The Buffalo Bills. When I talked about that defensive line. There's so much good going on with the Bills defensively. That really does seem as if this is... it seems as if this is going to hurt even more. So I'm going to throw open the phone lines at 416-870-0590, *591-888-666-0590. We appear to have some problems getting a hold of Mark Kelso. I don't know. I was going to say maybe he's been recruited to coach the team. I don't know about that. But I want to talk to Bills fans. And again, I do feel your pain. I really driving home last night and hearing those people call up was kind of gut-wrenching. So I want to hear from Bills fans. Doug Marrone came in as a guy who was going to do all sorts of imaginative stuff. It's going to be different. It's going to be creative. Now, I admit that having to change quarterbacks early in the season, that can damage your creativity. I mean, it's not like a head coach who wants to be creative. It's not like Kyle Orton's a freaking magician, right? So I want to have that discussion with Bills fans after last night's game. Look at the phone lights. Oof. Jason in Toronto. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Is this just the same story over and over again? Have you seen anything? Have you seen anything, Jason, that suggests to you that the Bills have taken any step forward this year? Go ahead.
How you doing, guys? No, they're not moving forward at all, and they continue to do the same thing and to the fans year in year. The issue that I have, this is something that I wanted to bring up that bothered me about this week, is the bringing back of Fred Jackson last week. You got C.J. Spiller out for the year. You've got Fred Jackson, who's it's a 1-2 punch with Fred and C.J. He has a groin pull. They bring him in for I don't know how many downs he played in last week's game. He was a limited role. He ends up re-injuring himself. They said he hurt himself in practice, but it was obvious that he hurt himself in the game. Why are they bringing these guys back earlier? Now you can't use him last night when you could have used him better and actually had him as the main down running back. And instead, they're bringing him back the week before. He re-injures himself, and he's not good last night and possibly not good for this. It's just bad coaching, and it's just bad decision-making on part of the management.
Well, Jason, I think a lot of it really does get to the point that Doug Marrone's coaching to save his ass. I think in a lot of ways, look, E.J. Manuel was awful. E.J. Manuel wasn't very good at the start of the year. E.J. Manuel was not going to lead the team to the playoffs the way he was playing. But when I see a head coach go to a guy like Kyle Orton, that indicates to me right away that the emphasis is on winning this year. The emphasis is on getting to the playoffs this year. And I can't say I blame the Bills, because look back to the time when that decision was made. What were we talking about? We were at the same time asking questions about the New England Patriots. My God, was this the end of the Patriots? Remember, they were awful. Tom Brady couldn't quarterback anymore. Everything Bill Belichick did that was working years ago, now it isn't working anymore. The New York Jets had imploded. So I think the Bills and Doug Marrone looked at the situation. And Doug Marrone's going, A, I got to save my ass. I got to save my job. B, you know what? I'm looking at the New England Patriots, and they don't really scare me right now. So maybe I'll go to Kyle Orton. I think Doug Marrone is coached this year like a guy who needs to get to the playoffs to save his job. And you know what? I don't know if you can coach an entire season that way. Now, hear me out. I think maybe halfway through the season it may become apparent to you. And then you go, okay, we got to crack the whip. We've got to get to the playoffs. But it seems to me like Doug Marrone has been coaching all year as if his job is in jeopardy. And you know what? That wears down your players. It really does. But more to the point, last night there were a couple of instances where I thought the Bills could have gotten creative, and they didn't. And I will also say this about Kyle Orton. We talked when Kyle Orton took over that job. We said he has to be Alex Smith light. He has to be a guy who doesn't lose the game for you. He has to be an efficient guy. That's what you want Kyle Orton to be. You don't want him to have to win the game for you. You don't want to put it on Kyle Orton. But I got to tell you, last night, fourth quarter, Sammy Watkins. I mean, he's got Brent Grimes. Brent Grimes isn't even in the same time zone. And Orton overthrew him. This is the one play he had to make last night. That was the one play he had to make. And he overthrew him. Don, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Is this the same old for the Bills, or have you seen some improvement? And let's point out, and I said it earlier, and I want to mention it again, that was a pretty good effort by the defensive line. And that defensive line is playing as well as a Bills defensive line has in some time. So I'm not sitting here and telling everybody that the cupboard's bare. Go ahead.
No, it's not, Jeff. The point is, Buffalo didn't score much last night, and that's unfortunate. But I'll tell you, I think they're on the way, and this is important. They're on the way to trying to turn this corner.
Mm-hmm.
And before I say anything else, I just want to say God bless Jim Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great quarterback. But anything else is this. I think Buffalo is on the way. I don't know who all the coaches are, but it takes more than one coach to coach a team. And somewhere, like you say, that defensive line is playing like a Chicago Bears line.
But here's the thing, though. We don't know right now what E.J. Manuel is. You don't have a first-round pick next year. Wouldn't you at least, Don, want to know about EJ Manuel now. Or maybe you do. Maybe you look at EJ Manuel and say, you know what, he's not the guy. In which case, here...
not the guy. I would trade him. I wouldn't hesitate. I mean, there's been lots of first-round draft choices. Listen, if Doug Flutie came out of retirement, I would put him on the field. There's no doubt. I mean, I don't know what happens with these guys. For example, Bob McCown won't talk about CFL, so nobody does. This is madness.
What's that got to do? What's that got to do with the Bills, man? Tim and Sid talk CFL. Matthew in Beamsville.
Hi, Jeff. How are you today?
I am doing well. Same old Bills?
I definitely think this is the same old Bills, but it's the point you touched on earlier on. They don't have that first-round draft pick yet next year, which really makes it difficult for this team to get better. I'm in no way a Bills fan, but you have to feel sorry for, you know, a group of people, a fan base, which is hardworking, has really endured for a very long time. So I definitely don't see anything, any improvement on the horizon for them. I don't even know if a coaching change would help.
Well, I think we do have to admit, though, that the defense is better than it's been in a while. I mean, there's something happening there defensively. You know, they've got to get, now Jerry Hughes is a free agent, they've got to get Jerry Hughes locked up. But there's something happening there defensively. Even last night, it was a pretty good performance by the defensive line. I will take Matthew as agreeing with me. It's a beauty when that happens. You can just say that a guy agrees with you. So he didn't get Mark Kelso. Oh, well. We move on. Hey, this will be fun. Devin Travis, the guy the Blue Jays acquired from the Detroit Tigers yesterday for Anthony Gose. You can follow him, by the way, at Devo Trav on Twitter. This will be fun. He's going to join us. We'll ask him how he feels about Alex Anthopoulos, among others, talking about how he is a Jose Altuve-type player. And see where he thinks he fits in. I can tell you, I got a text yesterday, last night, actually, at the Raptors game, from a scout with the organization. And he was talking about this guy, and he said it's a real cliche, but when Alex said that he's a ball player, this guy said that's the best description for him. He's just a ball player. He's a guy who understands the game and plays it the right way. And yet nobody's saying this guy's going to make the All-Star team next year. Nobody's even saying, frankly, that he'll be their starting second baseman. Although I had a guy tell me yesterday there is a scenario where he does win the starting job in spring training. The same guy tells me the Jays aren't exactly finished with their infield yet, which is good news. Devin Travis, newest member of the Blue Jays, will join us at 11 o'clock. Mike Tanier, one of our favorites. He is the national lead writer for Bleacher Report. He's going to join us. We'll get you set for week 11 in the NFL. Maybe get his take on what the Buffalo Bills do. And then at 11:40, John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports. Giancarlo Stanton and the Miami Marlins, according to Ken Rosenthal, are talking about a 12-year deal for $320 million. It'll be one of the most significant contracts in baseball history. We'll tell you, John Paul Morosi joins us. It's one thing to cover a guy through his arbitration years. It's another thing to sign a guy to a contract that basically takes him through his prime years as a player. This would be a remarkable deal if it gets done. So we'll have baseball, football talk ahead. Don't go anywhere. This is the Jeff Blair Show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.